Welcome to Forums for a Future. No, it's not 1960. It's nearly half a century later. But, once again, there are warnings of danger all over the land. It's time, once again, to reclaim a future that is free of war, racism, and poverty. A brighter future of promise and hope. I am Edward Renner, your host for a series of civic discussions, forums, if you will, toward creating a more viable future. This podcast is similar to a university course. There are three recent books that provide background information and are suggested reading. The complete outline for the podcast and all reference material are available on the Forums for a Future homepage on my website, which is at www.kerenner.com. While each of the individual podcasts is a self-contained piece, taken together, they are a sequential series that build on each other. There is a logical progression, starting with an identification of the issues, moving on to an analysis of how to better understand them, and ending with practical ways to respond to them. It's not sufficient to complain about the present, unless you have a perspective for the future that offers reasonable alternatives. The outline on the Forums for a Future homepage provides the structure for this trip from the present to the future. Podcast number 4, The End of the Modern Era. Part 1 of the series contained a brief 2-minute promotional and a conceptual foundation for thinking about change as the convergence of 4 key concepts of an economic, political, social, and personal perspectives. Part 2 is a series of 4 podcasts that provide a philosophy for the 21st century. In podcast number 3, the key concept of an inflection point was introduced. Today, in podcast number 4, I will discuss the key concept that we are now at the end of the modern era. To be at the end of the modern era is to be at an inflection point in history. The modern era began with the Industrial Revolution and progressed through the transformations in agriculture, manufacturing, and communications that followed. It has led us to the beginning of globalization and the postmodern era. Things are different now. We are at a time when what used to be true is no longer true. We are at a time when our core beliefs and values need to change if we are to successfully adapt to new circumstances. As a starting point, let's consider a lifetime. What is a lifetime? What are its dimensions? My grandfather was born in 1881, and he died at the age of 93 in 1974. As a child, his transportation was by horse, light by kerosene, heat by coal, news by hand typeset newspapers. As a young man, he witnessed the introduction of the automobile, the first manned flight by the Wright brothers, and the introduction of the telephone, the radio, and electrification. Later, he witnessed the introduction of TV, and with Apollo 11 in 1969, man walked on the moon a full 5 years before his death. What a phenomenal lifetime. When I was a child, I would often ask him to talk to me about what life was like when the streets of our hometown were mud and where automobiles were not welcome. I was always amazed at the grace with which he lived in the present, given the changes to which he had to adjust over his lifetime. When I was in my early 20s, and he in his 70s, I bought him a subscription to U.S. News and World Report. It was a long-shot Christmas present, since he already had drawers full of yet unworn socks and shirts from previous Christmases. He loved the subscription. I continued it for many years, until I figured he must be too old for that. He immediately renewed it for himself, and I, with my youthful stereotype of what it means to be really old, had just blown the only present he actually looked forward to. He was still reading it when he died. His mind was always in the present and always looking forward. My fascination with his answer to my question, "Can you remember when?" was driven by my own curiosity over what scope of change my lifetime would cover, given that the rate of change is getting faster and faster. After all, the life of someone born, say, two generations before my grandfather, in the 1930s, was not much different than the life he was born into in the 1980s. But the life I was born into, two generations later, in the 1930s, was already drastically different than the life he was born into in 1881, and yet much more was to come. When I personally think back, of course I have some overlap with my grandfather. I can remember the ice man who used to deliver blocks of ice for the ice boxes many people, including my grandparents, had in their houses. In fact, I can even remember when they bought their first refrigerator and the delivery man took away the ice box that used to be in the corner. I can remember the coal man who would shovel coal onto a metal slide that would fit through our basement window, and watching the coal bin fill to the top. As a kid, my job was to take the wheelbarrow, to take the ashes two doors down to the vacant lot, and dump them over the bank, like all the other neighbors did. And no, I did not live on a farm. I lived in Altoona, Pennsylvania, the heart of the Pennsylvania Railroad. And as a kid, I watched long trains of nothing but coal cars carrying the coal from Pennsylvania mining towns to other places across the country. But what I did not realize then was that by that time, the Industrial Revolution was practically complete. All that remained were the finishing touches in terms of achieving greater efficiency, better supply and distribution channels, and constantly increasing consumer demands. These refinements over the last half of the 20th century were no small accomplishment, including space travel, but they were a logical extension of what went before. It was incremental progress, quantitatively, but not qualitatively different than what went before. I can also remember when grocery stores sold raw food, and someone would cook it at home. The milkman would deliver milk in glass bottles to your door. By contrast, today, no one is at home to cook or to take in the milk. Old-style TV dinners have been replaced by frozen gourmet food, and time has become a commodity. The efficiency engine has pushed people close to the limit of what is possible within the constraints of modern life as we have known it. But as the Industrial Revolution in the United States was running its course, the modern era was winding down, and the beginnings of the next era were starting to take shape. Many did not see the changes coming, because the changes were not yet intrusive. They were in their early stages of creativity and innovation. They were like Ben Franklin flying his kite in a thunderstorm to learn about electricity. But unlike electrification, that took 100 years to come after the discovery. In contrast, the digital age and cyberspace has taken far less than half the time to make its effect felt. The turn of the century, the year 2000, is a convenient date for marking the inflection point for the ending of the modern era. As an example, when I was a graduate student, all of the data generated by research had to be calculated manually with the aid of a mechanical device, a calculator. All of the written papers had to be manually typed on a typewriter. Now I can process thousands of numbers on my personal computer in a matter of seconds. As I speak, my computer transcribes my words into the document I am writing. Although as a person, I'm still a bit of a throwback. I still bake my own bread and cook my meals from raw food, and I still understand mechanics. When my garage door opener failed to turn the light out after the door closed, I assumed, based on the past mechanics of the modern era, that a relay needed to be replaced. However, I could not find one, so I went to my genie dealer and asked. The genie just smiled. "There's no relay. It's the motherboard. They don't make replacements for that model anymore." So too it was with my washing machine. When it would not turn on, I looked for a switch. The repairman just smiled. "Motherboard," he said. In both cases, it cost the same to pay someone to replace the motherboard as to simply buy a new one. The result is the need for more and more landfill than we could ever imagine. We have gone from the mechanical to the logical, and with it, we have gone from local to global, from gears and switches to strings of zeros and ones, from manual processes which have a physical existence to invisible processes that cannot be seen, smelled, or touched, like work and production could be in the modern era. What was close and personal is now cyber and impersonal, and we have crossed the point of no return. With the new technology, it only takes one master painter to paint an automobile. The computer will track his every motion. The program will instruct the robot to do a perfect replication. The engineer will mathematically define the principles, and the computer will generate the next creation without the need of the one last remaining master painter. If someone in Thailand can farm your shrimp cheaper than the Gulf Coast fishermen can catch them, and he can, the shrimp boats in Fort Myers, Florida, will stay at the dock, as they do. This is the flat world that Thomas Friedman writes about. The digital world, built around communications and distribution, is interdependent and interconnected. No person can escape its effects. I went to China in 2002, and it was like being back in Altoona 50 years ago. Coal barges and new industrialization were everywhere, all with tall smokestacks bellowing out black smoke. It was a familiar sight. I had seen it all before in 1956. But China is not going to turn back. It can't. Our manufacturing base is now gone to them, and we are buying their goods because they are cheaper, while their emissions stoke global warming, while we go deeper in debt to China to pay for a war to try to protect our access to oil rather than develop alternative energy sources necessary to reverse global warming. This is the collapse that Diamond warns about. A progression crosses a tipping point because people cannot change some core beliefs and values, and they continue on a course that in the end will result in them being the author of their own misfortune. We have no other place to go. We must sustain the planet. It is now full of people and growing, but the food, water, and energy are becoming scarce. just like they did on Easter Island 200 years ago. In addition, there is the political element, the unilateral exercise of military force to preserve the American way of life as we have known it from the past, is destabilizing the world at the very time we need international cooperation to confront challenges of globalization, as Dreyer so clearly documents in his book, Future Tense. But this is only part of the story of the end of an era. We are the people who are alive today. It is us that needs to figure out what we need to know and what choices we need to make to rise to the occasion of leaving one era and entering another. Either we will succeed or we will fail. Welcome to the postmodern era. One does not have to go back very far in time when a man or a woman could put his or her hand on their son's or daughter's shoulder and say, "When I was your age," and the message would be meaningful because the parent's reality at that age would not have been appreciably different than the son's or daughter's reality at the time. But this is no longer true. No parent can do this in a meaningful way. Too much is different now. The parent's reality as a child is no longer the reality of his own child. This has never happened before in the history of humankind. This is new ground. Humankind has not been here before. What an exciting time to be alive. What more could you ask for? Tradition is no longer a good enough answer. Today is a time that requires thoughtful, cross-generational participation. There's no place to hide. Each of us and our children are in this together. It's time for a partnership about our collective future. For the adults, this means that whatever our core beliefs and values are, the chances are they will not be valid for the rest of our life. This is hard because it is our beliefs and values that give us our faith and our sense of coherent self-direction. Yet, we now need to ask whether the beliefs and values that got us to where we are today will get us and our children where we need to be tomorrow. This is the personal pillar. It is the personal aspect of why we are at an inflection point in history. This is the personal aspect of the end of the modern era. The next podcast, number 5, will deal with the psychology of self for making a successful transition from one era to another. Thank you for the day.
How many times must the cannonballs fly before they're forever?
No, it is not 1960, and I am not living in the past. It's nearly one half of a century later, and I am looking into the future. There's an urgency now to finish what was started then. It has taken another war, another replay of Vietnam, to bring us full circle. But this time, there is the absolute necessity of putting into practice what was then seen as the exuberance of idealistic youth. Well, it's no longer youthful idealism. It is our new reality for both the youth and the adults of today. Either we embrace fundamental economic, political, social, and personal change, or we will forfeit our collective future. The youth and the adults of today have common cause for a cross-generational commitment, a commitment by the youth to lay claim to a viable future. a commitment by adults to revisit the idealism of their past, this time for actually creating a sustainable future. What an exciting time to be alive.